Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Okay, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. I guess I'll reintroduce Evan since I thought I was bringing Evan on last segment,
nope.
But it's really this segment because I was a segment behind and
right.
I've been out for a couple of weeks and I've lost my touch.
Back on track.
But to the Western Hotline now, Evan Lazar, who is a Patriots beat reporter for CLNS Media and the host of the Patriots Beat podcast. Evan, thank you for joining us here this afternoon on the Western Hotline. I know that... you know, you are the enemy to the east of us. But, you know, I think a lot of people here in Buffalo are still pretty genuinely interested on what the path of the Patriots are going to be in this draft and how they're going to ultimately, you know, get better at quarterback. So I figured we'd bring you on. We talk a little bit about it. So welcome and good afternoon. Thanks for joining us, man.
No problem, Nathan. Thanks for having me on.
No, my pleasure. And I guess we should start with some of the offseason moves. Tight end was a position that the Patriots clearly prioritized this offseason, going out and getting Geno Smith and Hunter Henry and really kind of securing the top two tight ends on the market. And I know to some Bills fans' demise, you know, in particular with Geno Smith. I know there was like a Geno Smith fear bunker here in Buffalo that was created because everybody really wanted Geno Smith and they were worried he was going to sign elsewhere. And of course, he signs down the, you know, just down the road in New England. So ultimately, the signings at wide receiver and at tight end, does it really matter, Evan, based on right now if the Patriots are going to be sending out Cam Newton? And I guess this is more so a Cam Newton question to you and whether or not you believe what we saw in 2020 was due to the weapons around Cam or whether or not it was the weapons were bad and also Cam was bad.
Yeah, definitely a chicken or the egg argument. I think that's what we're all having here locally and I'm sure what they're having in Gillette Stadium. And I think that there's some support internally for Cam Newton's ability to turn things around this coming up season. Certainly what he was dealing with last year in terms of him personally coming into a new system, coming into a new team after 10 years in Carolina, then dealing with COVID mm-hmm. during the season. There are plenty of excuses to come up for Cam Newton, right? The COVID battle, the new system in a weird season in a pandemic year, the weapons around him were poor. Julian Edelman gets hurt early on in the season, and he has to throw to Jacoby Myers and Tamir Bird and Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene, two rookies at tight end, and that's all he was working with. So we can come up with all the reasons in the world that things were stacked against Cam Newton last year, but I think what you saw with him were twofold. One, just familiarity with the system and comfort within the scheme and how that impacted downfield accuracy, timing, all those types of things that we got so used to seeing with Tom Brady being a well-oiled machine. Cam was just never in sync with all of his weapons and never in sync with the timing and the rhythm of the offense. So you would start to hope that a year, you know, kind of removed from all of that, another year of practice, training camp, maybe a preseason this offseason, and he could get up to speed in that respect. But the question really boils down to is if he is ever going to be a consistent enough passer down the field. And really, outside of 2015, Cam has never been a super accurate quarterback throwing the ball down the field. So that's the biggest question is, can he refine his mechanics a little bit like we saw at times in the beginning of last year when he was sort of on the right track and then sort of got derailed by the COVID thing? And does another year in the system allow him to kind of get up to speed and understand where he's going with the football a little bit faster? It's a lot to ask, you know, and I'm not so sure that I'm completely sold, but I think that there is some internal optimism that Cam Newton will be a better quarterback in 2021.
So let's play out a scenario, Evan, where the Patriots decide, you know, moving up is just too rich for our blood. We like what we have in house. We like a couple of guys in the second or third round of quarterback that we think we could bring in and maybe develop long term. Or let's just pretend that's the scenario for now. Do you believe the players that they went out and got are a good fit for what Cam Newton can do? I mean, I know he, you know, for the better part of his career, always had that legitimate check down or sort of ready to go weapon at tight end at Greg Olsen. Now he's got probably two prime Greg Olsons, you know, maybe in terms of athletic profile and what they can do catching the football. And after the catch, I think both Hunter Henry and Johnny Smith are very, very good tight ends. But I just, it doesn't strike me, I guess. Part of me is wondering if they surrounded, if Cam Newton's the guy, whether or not they surrounded him with the type of talent that's actually going to elevate his game. And I mean, Kendrick Bourne's a nice player, but he's a wide receiver three at best. And I think Nelson Agholor, another nice player, but I think, again, he's sort of a situational, maybe wide receiver three at best. So although they were able to go out and spend a lot of money, especially at wide receiver and tight end, I'm not sure I look at those weapons and I say, man, this is the kind of like the perfect complement of weapons for Cam Newton's game.
Right, and the one thing I will say is that throughout his career, because of Greg Olsen, because of some of the other weapons that he had in Carolina, he was at his best, I would say, attacking between the numbers, right? Throwing the ball between the hash marks and throwing the ball on the outside was never really his strength. But last year what we saw was that throwing the ball down the field, you know, throws of 15, 20-plus yards down the field, Cam was a lot better on those types of throws than he was on the short, underneath stuff. And maybe they wanted to get a little bit more vertical. So now you have Hunter Henry, Johnny Smith, and Nelson Agholor, who's got some speed. You got those guys running up the field, the tight ends obviously running up the seams and over the across the middle of the field and things like that. I guess maybe they feel like that's a decent fit with Cam. And the second thing is you're going to run, you spend $24 million a year combined on Hunter Henry and Johnny Smith, and you figure you're going to be running a whole lot of 12 personnel with two tight ends on the field, and that allows you to run the football, right? And you can run the football effectively, and we all obviously know what Cam brings to the table as a runner. Still, last year was a really effective runner for the Patriots, even if he wasn't a very good passer. So I guess in theory, they could be sort of a smash-mouth, run-first football team again, and then use play action and other kind of misdirection to get those tight ends up the field and have Cam throw some easier passes up the field. But again, you know, Robert Kraft, he spoke a couple of weeks ago during the owners' meetings, the virtual owners' meetings, and he said we need to find a long-term answer to the quarterback position. That's the number one question in our organization right now is where are we going at quarterback? It's everybody's question on everybody's mind and probably one of the most popular questions to be asked right now across the league, just nationally. So where are the Patriots going at QB? I still don't think that Cam Newton is what they think is going to be the answer for the next 3 to 5 years, right? I think that they truly feel that they have to find somebody through the draft to solve that problem, whether it's in the first round or it's in the third round. I guess that remains to be seen, but I don't feel like they built this offense for 1 year, $5.5 million of Cam Newton, right? They really are thinking about this offense from a big picture standpoint with somebody down the road. I don't know if they have somebody particularly in mind, and we can talk about a few guys in this particular draft, but at some point they are going to pull the trigger on the next quarterback.
How much do you believe, Evan, you know, if this team ultimately decides, and maybe you could tell me none, but I wonder from afar, right? I would say the speculation has to be Bill Belichick probably didn't particularly like the way that people around the league, the media, were talking about the Patriots last year, that it was pretty obvious that without Tom Brady, that roster just was not a It just wasn't a competitive enough roster, and Tom Brady covered a lot of that up, and therefore people started to make the connection. Okay, well, I guess we know who the guy that was running that organization was. It was Tom Brady. It wasn't Bill Belichick, like everybody, like that argument that was out there, right? I wonder how much, Evan, this draft in particular, if they decide they need to move up and they need to get a guy, and maybe they move all the way up to four, maybe they move up to six or seven or somewhere in that range, and they go get Trey Lance or they go get Mac Jones or Justin Fields if he's not the third overall pick. Do you believe they'll be using Josh McDaniels and maybe why? For afar, it seems like McDaniels has stayed. He's being groomed. Eventually, he's the heir apparent to Bill Belichick. When that actually happens, I don't know, but I would assume if you're drafting a quarterback for the future and you're grooming Josh McDaniels, he's probably got to be a part of this process, right, of picking the next quarterback, because you're going to want to make sure that you've got the thumbs up of the offensive coordinator that, yeah, this is a guy that I can build around if he's going to be the guy of the future. And if that's the case, you know, who do you think maybe fits best into what McDaniels wants to do? As we know, though, McDaniels can change what he does and who he is schematically based around the talents of the quarterback. And I think that's maybe his one really good quality as a play caller.
Yeah, it really is. And last year, look, they had to do a crash course with Cam Newton, basically.
Right.
And he was still able to get a whole lot of option package type stuff in that offense and things that fit Cam Newton. It was actually pretty impressive in my mind that in a season where there was no training camp, really, no preseason game, we came out week one and Cam Newton ran the ball against Miami in that win when everything was going great, I think 15 times, right? And you see a completely different offense from the Patriots. Now, in terms of McDaniels' involvement, I think he is heavily involved in the decision-making process. He was at Mac Jones' second pro day at Alabama with Bill Belichick. There's that really kind of picture that surfaced around social media of John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, Bill Belichick, and Josh McDaniels talking right before Mac Jones' throwing session. So McDaniels was there. Then they traveled to Columbus, to Ohio State last week to check out Justin Fields. Josh McDaniels went with the Patriots assistant director of player personnel, Dave Ziegler, who's basically the new Nick Caserio. The two of those guys went to Columbus to watch Justin Fields throw. So I think Josh McDaniels is right in the middle of that quarterback discussion. And those are the two QBs Mac Jones and Justin Fields that the Patriots have done the most homework on. They did send a scout, Elliot Wolf, to Trey Lance's pro day at North Dakota State. But everybody at this point, besides Bill Belichick with Justin Fields, has seen Fields and Mac Jones throw live at one of their pro day sessions. So that signals to you that if they're going to go quarterback in the first round, they're really thinking about one of those two guys. So I think McDaniels is right there in the middle of all of this. And certainly with a guy like Justin Fields, you're not going to be a timing rhythm-based yep. offense with Justin Fields under center. He's definitely more of that vertical passing game, wants to hold the ball in the pocket and wait for things to develop down the field. So they're going to have to shift a little bit. But if you can get your hands on a quarterback that talented, yeah. then you do it every single day of the week, and you worry about sort of the details of the offense later on. And I think that's sort of the thought process right now, is we just need to get the guy with the most talent in the building, and then we'll figure it out from there. Mac Jones definitely fits a little bit more of that traditional Patriots mold, a guy that can stand in the pocket, deliver with accuracy, get the ball out quickly. You know, those are things that the Patriots have always kind of put their hung their hat on with Tom Brady, but you're not going to be able to replicate Tom Brady. And I think that that's an important element to this, is that the Patriots can't get too caught up in trying to find not necessarily the next Brady, but what I like to call Brady light, right? Mm-hmm. Just the guy mm-hmm. that can do sort of the things that Brady has done successfully in his career. If you get too caught up in that, you're going to be chasing your tail for a long time, because nobody's ever going to come in here and be a processor and be as quick with the ball as Tom Brady. So you're going to have to alter the offense a little bit to what guys are doing now. And I feel like Justin Fields, Mac Jones, those two guys are really the best fits in the first round. If they're going to wait on quarterback, maybe somebody like Kellen Mond comes into the conversation as an experienced starter in college, and they like some of those boxes that he checks in terms of the Parcells old quarterback boxes, you know, three-year starter, big-time conference, Senior Bowl MVP. Those are some things the Patriots have looked for in the past as well.
Evan Lazar here joining us on the Wester Hotline. We're talking some of the Patriots' offseason moves, some of the draft potential, what the Patriots might be doing. And Evan, for me, I've for a long time, maybe even dating back to like middle of last season, it felt like all along that the guy that made the most sense to me was Mac Jones. And I think it's the connection between Belichick and Saban, that program in New England, and kind of the inside information that Belichick would likely be privy to, that I'm sure when you consider the relationship between Saban and Belichick, I'm sure there's things that Belichick knows about Mac Jones that isn't widely known to other evaluators and scouts and head coaches and general managers across the league. It wouldn't surprise me at all. So if you are Bill Belichick and you're the Patriots, you probably have the most ammunition for a guy like Mac Jones. Tell me a little bit of why he makes a lot of sense for you guys. And when you look at that quarterback room behind Cam Newton, I think the one thing that you talk about a Kellen Mond, or you talk about, I don't know, any of the other third-tier players at the quarterback position in this draft, I don't know, it doesn't strike me as a move that would really sit well with Patriots fans. That, hey, you know we need a quarterback, but we're going to wait till day two, or we're going to wait till, you know, the third or fourth or fifth round to really address a position of need that I don't want to say the Patriots roster is like a really good quarterback away, but their defense is really solid. I feel like if they've got a good young quarterback, this is a team that is being talked about as they're going to go up against the Bills. And I think right now with Cam Newton, even with the roster, I still feel like they're probably not going to see a lot of they're right there with the Bills. I think most people are sort of giving Miami the benefit of the doubt now.
Right, yeah. I think that this roster with the Patriots, I mean, they went 7-9 last year with all of the things going wrong for them. So you look at what they did in the offseason, I wouldn't say they're a quarterback away, because these young quarterbacks, as you guys know, in Buffalo,
oh, yeah,
Josh Allen, takes a couple years,
yep,
right? It takes a couple years for them really to settle in. So maybe they're not a rookie quarterback away, but I feel like that's the best move for them moving forward. And you're 100% right. If they draft Kellen Mond on day two, especially if they draft Kellen Mond at like 46 with their second pick, people are not going to be happy about that here in New England. That's not going to do it for anybody here. With Mac Jones, though, to answer that part of the question, I think with him, it's a couple of different things. First of all, on the field, you have a really quick pocket passer that gets the ball out on time, a rhythm-based thrower, accurate to all three levels of the field, does the little things well in the pocket, right? You see some of those Tom Brady moves in the pocket. Not necessarily the most mobile guy, obviously, outside the pocket or as a runner, but he can make those little subtle adjustments in the pocket to avoid pressure and get the football out, do things like that. The other thing with Mac Jones that I think is really important for the Patriots is when the Alabama hired Bill O'Brien, former Patriots offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien, to be their offensive coordinator next season. Mac Jones is the one in the film room with the clicker teaching Bill O'Brien the Alabama offense, right? So this is a guy that's extremely cerebral, very smart player, and understood the ins and outs of the Alabama offense, basically just like a de facto coach, right, after a couple of seasons in the system. So you talk about the smarts, you talk about the intelligence, and you talk about the winning culture and the mentality that he had from Alabama coming into New England. It makes a whole lot of sense, and it aligns in a whole lot of ways. And former offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss, Patriots offensive coordinator, that is, who won his first three Super Bowls with New England, he actually went on the radio a couple different times and said Mac Jones is clearly the guy that fits the typical mold the best. So he's somebody that, like I said, has a little bit of those subtle pocket movement, accuracy from the pocket, timing from the pocket, smartness, you know, in the film room and in the playbook. It sounds a little bit like Brady Light, right? It sounds like some of the things that Brady brought to the table, and you can convince yourself that maybe Mac Jones can be Jimmy Garoppolo in this offense, right? I'm not going to say he's going to be Tom Brady because that'd be crazy. So maybe like a Jimmy G, hopefully a little bit more durable than what Jimmy Garoppolo brought to the table. And that's sort of why I can't believe that the 49ers would go Mac Jones at three, because I feel like his ceiling as a player when Jimmy's healthy, it's pretty much lines up in my mind. So I think it makes a whole lot more sense for the Patriots that maybe if Mac Jones slides a little bit, maybe he gets to 10, 11, you know, or in that range. And that was sort of the equation that Bill Belichick presented when we spoke to him last week, was, okay, we're sitting at 15, a guy that we thought maybe would go top six or seven picks starts to slide a little bit. Maybe we trade up to 12, maybe we trade up to 13 and jump a few teams in order to get our guy. And I could definitely see, if the Niners pass on him at three, that Mac Jones could be that quarterback that starts to slide into the, you know, 10, 11, 12 range, and maybe the Patriots make a small trade up, similar to what the Bills did to get Josh Allen, where you're not giving up what the Niners just gave up
right.
to move up 10 spots. You're giving up, you know, a future pick or two, and you call it a day.
So, Evan, the last thing I want to ask you about Mac Jones, and I want to ask you about, I think, a pretty common criticism I hear of him is, oh, well, it's really hard to evaluate a guy who sits behind, you know, four first-round picks on the offensive line and is throwing to two first-round picks, a Heisman Trophy winner, and then handing it off to a guy that could potentially be a first-round pick. And I think, although that is a criticism, I think that's totally based in fact. I just don't know that, like, as someone who wants to watch the position, that I'm thinking about how good the players are around him. Of course, that has to play a factor, but I think it's a little unfair to say that all of his success in college is just due to how good everyone else was around him.
Yeah, it's a fair criticism, and I also think the criticism of his, of the just physical talent and the ability to create on second reaction plays, right? When the scheme doesn't work, what can Mac Jones do from there? Because he doesn't have the athleticism. He doesn't have that wow arm talent that a guy like a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance has. So what's going to happen when everything doesn't go well? But I think at the same time, with the Patriots in particular, they are such, they're a coaching staff that is so confident in their scheme
right.
and in their system and in their culture and in all those types of things, that they look at it in a lot of ways and say, as long as the quarterback is pressing the right buttons, like if we're going to compare this to like Madden, as long as he's pressing X when he's supposed to press X, right, then it doesn't really matter what else is going on. And I think that that's sort of how the Niners feel and Kyle Shanahan feels. I think that's how the Patriots feel a lot of the time, is that they are a well-oiled machine, and they are just need a cog in that machine. They don't need their quarterback to come in and be Brady. They don't need their quarterback to come in and be Aaron Rodgers. They just need somebody that is going to press the right button at the right time, and Mac Jones did that for Alabama. Whether he's throwing to open receivers all day or not, he got the ball in the hands of the open man and could put those players in a position to succeed, especially after the catch, right? You got a guy that throws with good timing and good accuracy. He's hitting Devontae Smith on the run. He's hitting Jalen Waddle, you know, leading him into the end zone. Those are things that the Patriots, I think, really harp on is, okay, you know, don't try to do more than your 111, right? Don't try to do too much. Do your job and do your thing, even at the quarterback position. And Mac Jones does do a lot of those things on his own, that he's not going to make the offense worse, right? He's going to keep the offense on time and on schedule. And in the Patriot land, that's a good thing. That's what they want out of the QB. So I think that there is a lot of things pointing to Mac Jones, and we've sort of come off Mac Jones here locally and gotten onto Justin Fields a little bit just because of the talks about him possibly sliding, and he's just so uber talented that, you know, it's kind of hard not to gravitate towards that. But maybe the guy all along is Mac Jones, who's been sort of the guy that we've been talking about since January. Now, as we get closer to the draft, everybody's sort of falling in love with a guy like Justin Fields because of the talent. But maybe it ends up coming full circle and we get back to Mac Jones in a couple of weeks.
So, Evan, if for the Bills fans listening here that want some good quality content, especially some good All-22 content during the season so that they can keep their tabs on the Patriots, tell the folks where they can find your work.
Sure. You can find my work at EZLazar, L-A-Z-A-R, on Twitter and clnsmedia.com and our CLNS Media YouTube channel, Patriots Press Pass. And you can find it all there. And like you said, we do a lot of All-22 work, a lot of film study, a lot of analytical type of stuff. We certainly get into the Bills twice a year, and it's a lot of fun. So go ahead and check out YouTube, especially Patriots Press Pass.
Some of the best opposition research you can get for the Patriots folks right here with Evan. So, Evan, we appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for your time and for your analysis. We really appreciate all your work. And looking forward to having you on again as we move closer to the regular season and Patriots Week, of course. So looking forward to it, man. Thanks again.
Absolutely, Nate. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Evan Lazar there on the Western Hotline. I'm going to take a timeout. Joe Caparoso, he is the host of Badlands, TurnOnTheJets.com. So we'll talk to him next and get a little idea of what the Jets are going to do. Why? We know they're going Zach Wilson, but how excited are they about Zach Wilson? What else are they doing in this draft to build around the young rookie quarterback who we don't want to see? Well, I don't care. You know, like I would watch the Jets fail miserably again. But what are they going to do to help this situation so that Zach Wilson doesn't just turn into another Sam Darnold? So we'll talk to Joe next. It's coming up on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR. Don't do that. If you really wanted to listen to Sports Talk Saturday, just ask Alexa, say, hey, Alexa, I want to listen to Nate Geary. Don't do that, because I'm not sure that it'll get you anywhere that you need to be and or want to listen to.
Get you a live feed right to your house.
Right to my home, actually. You can go into my Ring doorbell.
Messed up.
Just kidding. Let's go to the Western Hotline. Joe Caparoso of what I view to be one of the better podcasts that he does, too, with Connor Rogers, a good friend of the program. Connor's on, I don't know, like once every other month or so here. And I reached out to Connor because I was like, listen, the guy that you do a lot of work with, Joe, is really talented. Love to have him on the show. So he gave me his phone number, and this is how you do things in the common era, is you just DM friends and they'll give you phone numbers, and that's how Joe's in the program. So Joe, you're on the Western Hotline. Welcome. It's the first time on your first time having you on my show, so we're really excited to have you. Love your work that you do over at Badlands and turnonthejets.com. So we're really happy to have you. We're excited to kind of talk to you about, everybody kind of knows what the Jets are going to do at two, but I want to kind of get some context and background on the second overall pick with Zach Wilson and what you guys are ultimately going to do. But ultimately, I also want to talk a little bit about how you're going to surround this young quarterback. So first and foremost, Joe, welcome, and thanks for making time for us here. And I don't know if you've got a good one-liner you want to start with, other than the fact I was going to introduce you as if Mina Kimes was Mariano Rivera. You're sort of like the Andy Pettit. You're going to give me six good innings here, and then I'm going to turn it over to the bullpen.
Look, I'll take the Andy Pettit comparison any day of the week. I'm not going to complain about that. Thank you for having me. Excited to be on.
Pleasure, man. Well, one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about is obviously, I was talking to Evan Lazar, who kind of covers the Patriots, and we were talking about this number two pick, right? And not only that, but Eric Edholm and Chris Trapasso earlier in the program, we all kind of said, yeah, more than likely Robert Saleh with his connections in San Francisco. San Francisco probably doesn't move up if they don't know exactly who is going to be available for them at number three. So let's just, you know, maybe put away all of the anxiety. It's going to be Zach Wilson. With that being said, what gives you the confidence, other than Joe Douglas, who I think is in a much, you're in a much better situation with Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, the head coach. So, but what is giving you the confidence that this time, the quarterback that you guys take, this is going to be the guy that you ultimately figure out a way to build around and turn in and really get to see the potential that you never really got to see, especially with a guy like Sam Darnold?
I mean, my main hope and the main difference compared to the Darnold situation is there are more pieces in place to properly build an offense around him. When the Jets drafted Darnold, they had to trade 3 second rounders to make that pick. So the year they took Darnold, they didn't have an extra first round pick like they do for Zach Wilson. They didn't even have a second round pick. Their next pick wasn't until late in the third round, and former genius Mike Maccagnan used that pick on an interior defensive lineman. He used another day three pick on a cornerback who's out of the NFL. Basically, no focus on helping Darnold. And also, Wilson will come into a situation where he has what looks to be a legitimate franchise left tackle in Mekhi Becton, something the Jets did not have in 2018. I think the group of receivers, as it currently stands, while it's not great, is certainly much better than what they were dealing with a few years ago. You have guys in Corey Davis and Jamison Crowder who are competent starting NFL players, at least. And you hope Denzel Mims and can reach his potential in year two in a better offense, and Keelan Cole rounding out the depth. So the situation is a little better. There's still a lot of work to be done. And you just, early signs indicate that Joe Douglas has a much better grasp on how to build and support around a young quarterback, his drafted young quarterback, yeah, than what the Jets initially did for Darnold, which was, some of the blame is certainly on Darnold himself, but he also never really had a chance to succeed here between the roster and the coaching staff he had.
When you look at Darnold now and the situation he goes to in Carolina, I don't want to spend a lot of time on you know, ex-girlfriends here, but with Sam Darnold, I find it weird that he's one of those guys that I think a majority of the fan base in New York was kind of ready and willing to move on from. But while they were ready and willing to move on from him, there was still a level of like a homerish pride that's like, I don't want to see Sam Darnold go somewhere else and have success, knowing that, you know, he was drafted. Everyone was really excited about Darnold and the upward type potential that he himself as a prospect had. And listen, as a Bills fan here in Buffalo, I think most people thought if you could have got Sam Darnold, and I think the majority of people here in Buffalo believe the Bills had targeted as their top quarterback in that draft, and they just couldn't get up in front of the New York Jets because the Jets got there first, right? But I look back at that draft and I think, you know, out of the guys with the most upside, Josh Allen is right there, but Sam Darnold was right there as well. And I'm wondering, you know, is there sort of like a fear or a worry within the Jets fan base that, like, he goes into a situation with an offensive coordinator like Joe Brady and an offense that's got weapons and a really established running game? And what if he has success? Is there going to be, like, a bitterness to that? Or is it just, it doesn't matter what happens with Sam Darnold, we're kind of ready to move on in this direction?
I think it depends what happens with Wilson. I think most fans liked Darnold, thought he was a good guy and was kind of given the short end of the stick here and would not mind him finding some type of success elsewhere, particularly if it's complemented by the Jets finding their own quarterback here. I think most of us agreed that it was best for both parties to move on. You know, while Sam has plenty of excuses, he was really bad last year,
yeah.
Straight up terrible. You know, even with the excuses that were going on around him, I think there's no doubt he's going to be better in Carolina. It's just how much better. And if his ceiling is the guy he was in 2019, which is, you know, 19 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 7 yards per attempt, a couple big flash moments, but pretty, you know, middle of the road, 20th best starter in the NFL. If that's what his ceiling is going to be, then the Jets made the right choice to try to swing for the fences and get someone who hopefully has a higher ceiling than that. Now, we don't know if Zach Wilson's going to be that guy. I do think he's a better, higher ceiling prospect coming out than Darnold. But you never know with these, you know, with these guys in these situations. And you guys saw that with Allen. I think myself included were very skeptical about that pick, and he shut a lot of people up and really got so much better year over year and made that actual leap that you always talk about with young quarterbacks. He's definitely in a much better situation than Darnold was, but that doesn't take away from how much better he's gotten with his accuracy and how he remains a weapon in the running and the pass game. So it was time to move on. It was kind of a no-brainer when you factor in the financials and that Joe Douglas didn't even draft Sam Darnold in the first place, and the Jets were overdue to have a GM, a head coach, and a rookie quarterback line up on the same timetable, which they just haven't had forever. So, you know, best of luck to Sam. Not too good of luck because the Jets have Carolina's second-round pick next year, and we want that to be a high second-round pick. But it's definitely time to turn the page.
Yeah, and it's funny, too. I often think about, you know, lining up that the general manager, head coach, and quarterback, and part of why I think there's so much excitement here in Buffalo is that there is that it's synced up and there's one at times it can be a little nauseating, but there is like this one message, right? Like there is no one's left sort of wondering where, you know, one guy stands over the other. There's a lot of synchrony, or I don't know what a good word for how synced up this organization is. It's starting to feel like New York is sort of getting on that level. And I think if you're a Bills fan, you're probably a little worried about that because the Jets have had talented teams in the past. They just couldn't figure out how to have that success. And going into this year, what makes you guys, and you and maybe just you in particular, so excited about this young quarterback out of BYU? And what makes you think like this, other than the fact that we saw him have the success he had last year, I think the things that pop out in film are the arm strength, his ability to move outside the pocket off script, which I think is sort of where the league is going and why the conversations around Mac Jones are so confusing to me. When I look at sort of the prototypical, maybe not size and strength-wise, but the prototypical where the NFL is going, Zach Wilson fits that mold.
Yeah, I think you nailed it in that his arm strength and ability to attack accurately down the field is particularly exciting for Jet fans because you're coming off 2-3 years of a very horizontal offense. Part of that's on Gase, part of that's on Darnold, but it was very, you know, throwing a 3-yard pass on 3rd and 9 over and over again. Yeah. Zach Wilson, maybe the thing he does better than any quarterback in this class is throw the ball down the field accurately and play aggressive. And he's certainly not a conservative quarterback. He could create off script, which is really important in today's NFL. I think there are some fair concerns about his durability, about the competition level, but I think when you add everything up, with how quick his release is, how creative he can be in avoiding pressure and then taking a shot down the field, it just creates a higher ceiling for their offense and not an offense that's basically trying to just play off their defense and try to win games 17-14 here or there, which is basically the only way the Jets were able to win a handful of times over the past couple of years. He's also coming into a coaching staff that all of us are rightly excited about. I feel certainly you're going to be excited about anyone after Adam Gase. But I think Robert Saleh was one of the top guys, if not the top available candidate, and the Jets landed him. He brings over LaFleur from San Francisco, a guy that all of us are hoping has the same offensive mind as a Kyle Shanahan. And we know in a minimum is going to bring a system that makes sense and works in today's NFL, which the Jets just didn't have. So the offensive system should set up Zach Wilson to succeed a lot more than they previously had, and he just has more arm talent and more of an aggressive game to hopefully take advantage of it than Darnold did.
Joe Caparoso here of Badlands on the Wester Hotline. Part of, I think, the discussion of this offseason that was almost refreshing for me as someone, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a Jets hater. I'm not a huge Jets fan myself, but watching what they did this offseason was so against what the Jets have been known to do in past offseasons. It made me stutter. It stopped me in my place a little bit. And I thought, there is clearly a changing of the guard in New York. Like, them not going out and setting that, listen, Carl Lawson deal, every team would have loved Carl Lawson. I know every Bills fan was stumping for Carl Lawson. That was a huge get for the Jets. And I think that really set the tone for free agency, as this is not the type of year we're going to go out and get every guy at every top position and spend $100 million this offseason. And in fact, other than that move, and I think the Jared Davis move is a sneaky good one. You mentioned Corey Davis, another sneaky good move. I don't feel... Listen, the team that has run this division for the better part of two decades did exactly what the Jets have done for the better part of two decades, and it feels like the smarts this offseason really, really moved into Joe Douglas's corner. I was impressed by their offseason. Talk a little bit about what you liked about their sort of strategy into free agency.
I mean, just finally addressing edge rusher. The Jets have not had a legitimate edge rusher or an edge rusher.
And he is legitimate, dude. He is. Yeah. And not only that, listen, and the thing that people, that the detractors might say is, well, this is a guy that had one really good season his rookie year and hasn't had the sack numbers that you'd like to see. Well, I will say he's going to go into a Jets defensive line that was probably the strength of their team and has been the strength of their team for years, but it's never been on the edge. It's on the interior, and you got a top five pick on the inside of that defensive line to match with an edge rusher. Like, it made so much sense to me, and I'm just, from a outside looking in, it was such a smart, savvy move, and to get Robert Saleh, the guy that he needs to run that defense accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely built the defensive front that Robert Saleh is going to need to run his defense. We saw how it worked in San Francisco. They just had a deep, loaded, talented defensive line, and now you look at the Jets, you have Quentin Williams. You have some underrated guys who were productive last year in Foley Faiukasi and John Franklin Myers, but now you really round it out by putting Carl Lawson on the edge, where he's going to bring some juice to that position that they just have not had for a long time. You add Vinnie Curry for further depth to round out that group. They're going to be able to get after the quarterback. They still have some work to do in the defensive backfield, and I think that will come through the draft and maybe after the draft a little bit, but their pass rush should be as good as it's been in a very long time. And I think offensively, getting Davis in here, a guy who should be a good fit for what they're doing, could win on contested catches, is a willing blocker in the run game. I don't think he's someone you're counting on to go have, 1,100 yards receiving.
Sure.
But he is going to be reliable when you go to him and be a good complement for what they have with Mims, Crowder, and Cole around him right now. I think I'm curious to see what else they do after the draft. Is there a couple other minor tweaks? I think while they've made progress on the depth chart, there are still some fair concerns on the offensive line and at cornerback in particular. But they definitely moved the ball forward and focused on ideally younger up-and-coming free agents, guys coming off years that you feel like they're still going to be hitting their prime the next two or three years, instead of investing guys maybe more towards the back end of their prime.
Is Le'Veon Bell a name that you were thinking of in that? I don't know. That was kind of one that popped
up.
Among
many, along with Jermaine Johnson and a couple other disastrous recent free agent contracts.
Yeah, no. The last thing I got for you, Joe, and I want to talk to you about the 23rd pick, because I think because we know what the Jets are likely going to be doing at the second overall pick, that 23rd pick really becomes maybe the more important of the two picks, because obviously quarterback's the most important position. There's no denying that. And in particular, in this organization, the quarterback position, really, they need to solidify it for the future moving forward. We all agree there. At 23, who could they take at 23 that would make you think, man, like, I don't know. I could tell you're confident about this organization. I think you should be. But like, who is the pick at 23 where you just say, man, this is a home run. This team knows how they need to build around this quarterback. And I feel more confident about this organization, not because of the second overall pick and addressing the quarterback position, but because they did this to help facilitate the growth of the quarterback position.
I mean, I think in a perfect world, you're landing a day one starting offensive lineman, whether that's Vera Tucker or Tevin Jenkins. I don't know if those guys are going to be there, but if they are, you need a guy who could start for you right now at guard and then maybe eventually kick out to right tackle. But you cannot go back with Alex Lewis and Greg Van Routen around Connor McGovern on the interior offensive line. And that, if you get those two guys at 23, that's a good match of need and value. Of course, you don't want to overreach because you need to fill a hole on your roster, but those guys at 23 to follow with your next franchise quarterback going offensive line to protect him is exactly the kind of message you want to send. The last time the Jets were good for a prolonged period of time, it's because they took DeBrickishaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold in the first round, and that really built the foundation of how they were able to run the ball, protect their young quarterback who had a lot of limitations in Mark Sanchez, but was still enough to get into the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row. So you got Mekhi Becton last year. You get another blue-chip offensive lineman with your other first-round pick. You're setting Zach Wilson up to succeed that much more. Now, if the board breaks a certain way and those two guys aren't there, I see them probably going cornerback because they do need a lot of help there. Still a critical position on the defense overall. I know it's popular to mock them taking a running back, whether it's, you know, Harris at 23 or 34. I'd be really surprised if Joe Douglas takes a running back at 23 or 34. I think all fans have their fingers crossed that Avira Tucker or Jenkins is there at 23, and the Jets build protection for Zach Wilson, especially because one of the biggest knocks on him is his frame and potential durability.
100%, man. Hey, tell the folks here that are listening where they can find your work and any promos of work you got coming up here before the draft.
Sure. You can check out Connor and my podcast on Patreon. It's patreon.com/BadlandsToJ. We have our first ever New York Jets-centric draft guide coming out Monday, so make sure to check that out. We have weekly shows usually two or three times a week now. So it's just, patreon.com/BadlandsToJ.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you. Thanks for being available for us and jumping on and giving us some good Jets insight. Hopefully have you on again sometime soon. And enjoy the draft. I know this is kind of the time of year where you get a lot of sleepless nights. And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, my girlfriend, when I'm at nighttime, I'm coming in bed late because this is the time we have to catch up on what we got to catch up on. It's the tough time of year. So enjoy it, man. And good luck for the draft and hope to talk soon.
Great. Thank you for having me.
No, my pleasure. Joe Caparoso there on the Western Hotline. I got to take a timeout. I got two coming. Mina Kimes, 1 p.m. coming up next here on WGR.
Griselda. Griselda.
Okay, I've got another quick timeout. I've got Mina Kimes of ESPN. She joins us next at 1 p.m. Got a lot to talk about, so we'll have her up coming up, so don't want to miss that here on WGR.